Hello, and welcome to The Backstory. My name's Tim Waters, and as a volunteer for Longmont Public Media, I have the good fortune of hosting this program, which gives me a chance to invite people like this together to share stories with the community, stories that you might have read a little bit about in the newspaper, but if you listen to The Backstory, you're going to get a chance to go a little deeper, be a little more knowledgeable about what's going on in the community. So I appreciate, I'm going to introduce this crew in just a minute. I appreciate the fact that they've been willing to carve time out of busy schedules to spend an hour with me and with the community this evening. Before we get started, today, this is a live program. We're coming to Longmont live on March 27th from the beautiful studios in downtown Longmont, studios of Longmont Public Media. But before we start this program, today was another one of those days in this country that we wish never happened, but happened all too often. There was a school shooting today in Nashville, Tennessee. Three children and three adults were murdered senselessly, again. So to get into the conversation about food security, it probably as devastating in terms of its implications as other forms of violence that we see in our society. But we do want to extend our condolences to the residents of Nashville, Tennessee, and all of those who are directly affected by another tragedy today. So with that, thank you to this group for being here. Topic tonight is food insecurity, one that's not unfamiliar to many Longmonters, given what we've come through in the last few years. But everything I think we've known about food security or insecurity and how we're responding is we're learning and relearning as we go along. And the people who are going to help us with that relearning are Nancy Horanek, who is the formal title is, are you the director of the Round Pantry?
I took my name tag off. It says crew chief. I'm one of the people who keeps things rolling. I basically facilitate.
Yeah, well, Nancy is a career educator. She was a distinguished and recognized and highly valued member of the St. Frank Valley School District for many, many years. And she took that hat off and put a new hat on. And if people aren't familiar with the Round Pantry, they're going to learn more about it tonight and the great work that they're doing at the Round Pantry. Carla Hale, most people are familiar with Meals on Wheels because they've heard, because it's catchy, right? They've heard about Meals on Wheels. How much people know about its operations and how to help is a different question. I had the good fortune recently of being part of the Champions event over at the Senior Center. It was so much fun. Yeah. You might want to talk about that as we go through this.
I will do that.
But it is so impressive what you do with Meals on Wheels. And Mark Cowell, director of the Hour Center, most people know Mark for all kinds of reasons. But tonight, I really want all good, all of them good.
Okay. Tries to get a little worried where this whole thing is going.
But I want people to learn more tonight about what the Hour Center does in terms of its role in helping families with self-sufficiency and closing the gap between what they have and what they need so they can prosper in this community. So you know what the topic is. We've been chatting about the kinds of questions we want to ask. I want to start with just learning more about you as individuals and kind of what drew you to your work and fill in the gaps around your organizations and what you do that I have not fully explained here as we get into this. Mark, you want to start? We'll just go clockwise.
Sure. So I've been at the Hour Center for almost 4 years. I took over or came in behind Edwina, who had been there for over 20 years, and I was a good 8 months ripe into the position when the pandemic hit. So. But fortunately, I felt like I was well equipped at that situation because prior to that, I spent 5 years as the director of programs at Sister Carmen Community Center, which is another family resource center that serves East Boulder County. So most of my career, I've spent working in the nonprofit world, over 20 years working with individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. After 20 years, it was time to make a career change. I just felt like I needed to do something different, something more. And I just happened to come across the job at Sister Carmen. Was fortunate enough to get that role. Fell in love with the work that they were doing and everything that I learned there. And one thing led to another that when Edwina started talking retirement, I started talking to my supervisor a little bit about it. And one thing led to another, and I received the job. And been off and running full speed ever since.
Well, good for the Hour Center and good for Longmont.
Thank you.
Thanks for what you do every day. Carla, tell us about you.
Well, I'm actually a Longmont native, and my parents still live in the same house that I grew up in, so I'm very settled here. And I've been with Longmont Meals and Wheels for 21 years. Oh. I started as the volunteer coordinator, and then 11 years ago, I took over for executive director. And I never thought that's where I would be. I was one of those people, even into my adulthood, I really wasn't sure where I belonged. And I did find a place, and I love their mission, and I just really love what the organization does, and we have a great team.
It's so cool when somebody finds exactly what they're supposed to do,
yeah.
Not having known, and then you nail it, and you're right where you're supposed to be. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nancy, tell us about you.
Well, Tim shared a big part of it. I was a career educator, and mostly public education. I was a teacher for 20 years, and then I worked in curriculum development, and then became an administrator. And being an administrator, I think, is what put me in touch with the varied needs of all communities. I think I was one of those people with blinders who kind of thought, well, certain areas had certain needs, and our children came from all kinds of places and stages and had significant needs. After I did that, I was in university education and actually worked with second career individuals who were also facing needs that kind of surprised me. Mm-hmm. The student who was living on student loans to pay her tuition because she was getting her master's degree, and the ramen diet just really blew me away. So as I was retiring for about the third time, some of our folks in our church became aware that folks would come through the parking lot, stop by in the church office, and say something like, I got some cereal for my kids, but I didn't have any money to buy milk. And very often, when the emergency funds were depleted and the bit of food we could hold on site, it would be the pastor out of the pocket. And so some of us started investigating, and we were familiar with Our Center, very familiar with Community Food Share, and we asked them for their guidance, sat down around a table, very similar to this, only rounder, and they said, we're noticing that in that quadrant of the city, we don't have good access. People don't have bus transportation or whatever, and we would encourage you to become a food pantry. And I have to honestly say, five people sitting around a table probably went because we knew it was going to be a lot of work.
Yeah.
This, at this point, 13 years hence, we didn't know how much work, but we do now know, and I know it was sort of my next calling, because it truly has been a blessing for those of us who take part in it, and we believe a blessing for our community. And so I just moved those skills of sort of organizing and getting the right pieces in the right place and saying, let's get after it into a new venue.
So I suspect most people in Longmont, when you mentioned the Round Pantry, will know where we're talking about. But just in case some don't, talk about, you mentioned the church.
Okay, we are located at Westview Presbyterian Church, which consists totally of round buildings. And until our last re-roofing, it had chocolate brown roof tops. Mm-hmm. And so we were referred to as the Chocolate Chip Church. So that's where the round pantry term came. So we're at 15th and Hover.
Very good. Carla, Meals on Wheels base of operations?
We are located at the Longmont Senior Center. And we are housed there with the goodness of the city. So we are able to have our space there, and we pay no rent, no utilities. And so it allows us to do a lot more for the community than what we have in the past.
Yeah, you attribute that to the goodness of the city. I think the city would think about the goodness of Meals on Wheels and what you do to enhance the work.
But I am so thankful every day.
Listen, most people know what an extraordinary senior center we have,
yeah.
Right? It differentiates Longmont from a lot of other communities. But what you do, right, in and through the senior center is remarkable as well.
Thank you.
Most people would know where the Hour Center is as well, Mark, but in case anybody in town doesn't, just give us a reminder.
Yeah, we're located at 220 Collier Street, so we're right across the street from Georgia Boys, which actually used to be our old soup kitchen, and right next to it where Habitat Humanity is used to be one of our other buildings. So there's multiple buildings that we had on the other side of 3rd Avenue, and now we house all of our services for our Family Resource Center at that one site.
You know, with all the narrative about development in town these days, it has been fun to see that development occur, right, and being able to raise the profile and extend the reach of the Hour Center and other services in the area. So let's drill down a little bit now on, you're all nonprofits. How do you get funded? Where does your money come from if you're a nonprofit organization in this town doing this kind of work? How do you stay in business? Yes.
Well, we are completely donor funded. And our donations, we don't solicit a lot. We make the opportunity available. We, too, are hosted by the church. While we're an activity, a mission of, we're also a separate, we're a distributing agency of Community Food Share. So we are not a religious organization, but the church hosts us. And they provide heat and lights and space and all those critical things. Beyond that, the money comes from, yes, some of our church members and a whole lot of members. We have what we call partner churches, people that come alongside and recruit volunteers and provide donations, sometimes just individuals out of pocket, other times out of their mission budgets. We receive donations from the community at large and the nation. We have a woman from, we believe it's a woman, from New Jersey who sends us money. We're not too sure how or why, but knew somebody who heard something and sends money. Then we also apply for grants as we are able. Being totally volunteer-based, sometimes that's a little more difficult, but we've had donations, or grants rather, from local businesses. We've had a grant from the state, the Food Pantry Assistance Grant. And then more recently, a fairly sizable donation from an individual church. So it's all what comes in, and it's kept us afloat.
That is through the goodness of not the city so much as the mm-hmm. as the residents. Talk about Meals on Wheels. How are you funded?
So Longmont Meals on Wheels by choice does not get any federal or state funding. We do get funding from the city and from the county. We also really rely on the grants that we get and the donations from the community. So we do, Katie Weiser is our development and communications director. And so she's the one that goes out there and raises a lot of the funds for us. And she does a really good job at it. But a good part of our funding does come from community members. And without that, we really wouldn't be able to do what we're doing.
Mark?
Yeah, we're very similar. We have a very diverse funding portfolio, if you will, but the number one funder is the community. It's absolutely amazing what this community does. I'm still, in this day, just humbled and awe with how the community stepped up during the pandemic. If you would have told me the sort of revenue that would have come in to support their neighbors and their coworkers and their family members, it was absolutely amazing. So. Community is very big for us. We have wonderful partnerships with both the county and the city mm-hmm. from funding standpoint, a lot of grants and foundations. And then, a little bit here and there when it comes to businesses, a lot of the churches here in the community. Mm-hmm. The Hour Center was founded based upon a bunch of churches back in the 80s, and most of those churches will still contribute various amounts on a monthly or quarterly basis to the Hour Center.
You helped with the kind of segue to the next question here, which is pre and post pandemic. But before we go there, before we leave the topic of funding, anything you'd like the community to know about funding, where you are, where you're headed, what you see some of the challenges being specifically regarding funding?
Well, what I wanted to add is that donations come in various kinds. And so one of the biggest donations that we rely upon, and I know that you, particularly Mark, do, but I'm sure Carla, well, I know you also do, and that's the time, mm-hmm. the time that community members put into what we do. While we are housed at Westview and have many Westview members, the bulk of our volunteers come from all over the community. And so we rely on that. And then we also have in-kind donations. And my example would be today. We had four different donations, one of which we anticipated a church had done a food drive, and they brought that in. Another lady has become a regular, and she cares for her mother. And she and her mother decided they wanted to help the community. They wanted to help people in the community. So they place a pickup order at one of the stores local. They have the staff at the store load it into the trunk of the car, and it's like we do a drive line, so it's a reverse drive line. Mm-hmm. She drove by, and we took out of her trunk probably well over 100 pounds of food. Wow. And then we had two other individuals who happened to come by. Now, we were in the process of preparing for tomorrow's distribution and happened to run short on rice. We went through the carts quickly, did the weighing, and put that right on the table. So where are we COVID, post-COVID, in terms of funding? It's finding some consistency. Mm-hmm. Because like all of us, people get busy, yeah, and they donate, and then they maybe don't, and then they have a few things that they bring by, and then they don't. And we're trying to maintain that stream of whatever service we provide. So it's knowing that we deeply appreciate whatever is donated, but building our capacity to keep that consistent.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave funding in kind of where you are and you know what the future looks like, mm-hmm, without giving you a chance to weigh in.
Sure.
As well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, volunteers, food, you know, for me, I always tell people any size donation is mm-hmm, welcomed and meaningful. And one of the things that really helped us during the pandemic was we saw households and individuals that maybe hadn't given in a while or might have been new to us, to your point with the consistency, all of a sudden they started writing us a $10 check every single month or a $25 mm-hmm check, mm-hmm, and up. And that really sustained us through the pandemic. However, we've also been seeing, as the pandemic was kind of in that rearview mirror, if you will, we've been seeing kind of this leveling back down. And I know we'll get to this in a little bit, but the needs, at least for us, have gone past the apex of the pandemic at this point. So, you know, for us, we want to continue to encourage and let people know the issues and the struggles out there are still there. They're still real. They're increasing. Mm-hmm. And the only way we can do it is with everyone's help. So, and whether that's $5 or that's $5,000, we welcome it all. And we're very thankful for any of it.
Yeah, we're a part of the reason for wanting to have this conversation tonight, right now, mm-hmm, is some of that, if you think about curves, mm-hmm, right, thinking where funding might be going one direction and needs going another, and you know where those cross, and you start to look at more and more a bigger gap right between resources and needs. Before we leave, though, anything you want to share about funding?
Can I say ditto?
No. Yeah.
We're in the same boat that everybody else is in, and we did see a lot of money come in at that time, and it was great and it was helpful, but we're still doing the amount of work that we were doing before. Yeah. So all the support across the board, just like what they both just said, is that we are needing more volunteers. We always need the food. And with the food prices going up right now too, we're even seeing that as an impact on everything, not just for the program, but for the people that we're serving. Yeah. The money's not going as far. So they really do need even more support than what they were receiving before.
You know, the whole world these days, I know, kind of marks life by pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, right? And I think we're still trying to learn our way into what the new normal is going to be in the post-pandemic era. But characterize the challenges that you were taking on pre-pandemic, how you responded during the pandemic, and now post-pandemic. Characterize what that challenge or those challenges look like. Mm-hmm. I think people need a deeper understanding of where we come from and where we are and where we're headed.
Mm-hmm. Sure. You know, for me, it's hard to respond to pre-pandemic. Like I said, I had about 8 months in the role. However, you know, the one thing that we did definitely learn is to be very agile. You know, as for all of us, you know, the world got turned upside down. We couldn't provide services the way we had traditionally done for years and years and years, but we knew that we were built for that moment, and we just had to figure out how the heck to do it. And that's one of the most prideful things I have with my team is I still remember the day that basically the world shut down, I kind of called it, and everyone came into, you know, all the staff came in and everyone was looking at each other like, what the heck are we doing here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone was given a choice. I understand you can go home if you need to, if you don't feel comfortable. And the entire team said, no, we're staying. So, you know, we've really learned to be agile. We've really learned to try to even go further in meeting people with where they're at. Mm-hmm. And coming out of the other side now, I think the struggle for us anyways is just keeping that energy going, the burnout. We were talking a little bit earlier before we came on that for us, we were hoping as the pandemic looked like it was subsiding the beginning of last year, we thought, okay, we could take a respite. Yeah. We can all take a collective mm-hmm. breath together. And then February, the gas prices went through the roof. Yeah. And the needs started going right back through the roof at the Hour Center. And the wear and tear on my team, on my colleagues, you can see it on everyone's faces. I mean, they've gone through a lot. And the struggle right now is continuing to find ways to be positive, find that energy, and keep going. So, you know, we're looking to now make a turn back to the way we used to do things as a family resource center, but we're still in that crisis mode at the same time. Yeah. And that's a difficult balance for us right now is to figure out how can we continue to meet the families that are in crisis, but get back to the family development work that we would like to be doing.
Yeah. Characterize Wheels on Wheels pre and post.
So for us, I think that a lot of people, when they think of food insecurity, they're not thinking of seniors. A lot of them think mm-hmm. of families, they think of children. But it's really hidden hunger. And so we found that before, we were actually reaching a lot more of those individuals. And our numbers had really been growing. We were close to 500 meals a day. We make our meals at the senior center and deliver them all with volunteers. And then during the pandemic, those numbers were rising. But then we were losing a lot of the people that we had that as normal individuals that came to us either at the senior center or that we delivered to. Because we had a lot of people that died. Many moved into nursing care, or they moved in with families because everybody was trying to come up with a new way to make their lives work and what was gonna be the best and safest for everyone. So now we saw then where our numbers went down a little. And now what we've realized is that we need to figure out how to reach those people. And there was always the word shut-ins. You know, years ago you were shut-ins and people don't really use that word that much anymore. But we are seeing that people really are. And so some of these elderly individuals that no longer are going to church, they're not going to the grocery store, they do not have any access to the internet, or they don't know how to use computers, they're not finding help. So we're finding that there's a lot of people out there that are in need, but how do we all reach them? How are we able to get them back into the community and be able to serve them the way that they really should be served? And I think that is a real struggle for us right now, is where do we reach out for that? And so this is a good segue into Community Champions Day that Tim helped with. So Meals on Wheels America actually started Community Champions Days years ago. And the idea was, as they are not a parent company for us, Meals on Wheels America, they are actually a lobbying organization. And their hope was is that we could just get rid of hunger by 2020. Senior hunger was not going to be a thing. Well, look what happened 2020. So Community Champions is a time for us to get community members together, to get the mayor and Congress, there was a congressman that came, all these different individuals to come and show their support to our organization and show the need that is around here. And we also served our 3 millionth meal even the week before. So those are times for us to show that the need really is out there for all of us. And it will continue.
Well, I would say if the turnout for the Champions event is any indication of the level of both recognition and support that you enjoy among at least leadership, not just in Longmont, throughout the county, you ought to feel pretty good because it was a remarkable
It was expression. Really a good day. I kept looking at the capacity for the room and hoping we didn't have a fireman there because I knew we would be in trouble.
Well, there were firemen there, but
there
they
was.
Were serving.
They weren't looking up at the wall at all.
They probably
Tim, if I could connect a couple things that they said, one of our pride moments is that 3 years ago, minus 2 weeks, we did our last indoor shop, which is the way we had been set up. And then exactly 3 years ago, which would have been 2 weeks hence, we opened our first driveline. And we never missed a beat. In 2 weeks, we just turned the whole operation over. We also, over the course of the next year, doubled where we had been. Because we were fortunate, having started in 2010, to have gone through the recession and started down that hill. And so our numbers were coming down, and we were feeling unwarranted pride in, oh, you know, we don't have that many people coming. Since then, we've doubled what we were doing before. Mm-hmm. But what I think, one thing we're realizing, part is that how do you maintain the momentum? But it's also sort of the understanding that Carl is talking about. The understanding and how can we keep getting the word out that we are here. We are here to help you. And to figure out what we can do to help people understand that no, COVID didn't go away. No, situations are not necessarily better for people. No, there still is a huge need. Mm-hmm. And then work on the misunderstanding that, well, yeah, COVID was over and people went back to work and everything is fine, but how can we, without being prideful, increase that understanding and reach out so that people do understand that food insecurity is a piece of a very large picture. Mm-hmm.
Talk about, this is off script a little bit, talk about that bigger picture and what you're learning, right? And how it's serving you and your team as you move forward.
Well, I think what I would say, and I'm just a student of it, but what I think about is the fact that food insecurity, which basically means you don't know where your next meal's coming mm-hmm. from. You don't know what or how much is gonna be on that plate. You don't know how you're going to get it. That's a piece of it. And it's a foundational piece because then if you don't have food, you have to make a whole lot of other decisions. And when you make those decisions without food, you may not literally have the intellectual, the emotional capability to make those decisions. Mm-hmm. You also may not have the good health to be able to go out and make other choices. And it's all predicated then on, do you have a place to live? Do you have dependability with your housing? Do you have a job or other occupation that uses your skills and abilities and helps you with that food security? And so many other kind of not only ripple effects, but that support this. It's not just getting some extra food. It's how all that wraps together, which then I turn and I look to Carla, accessing, getting information to the people who can use Carla's services, who can use the two things that we do, and then also make use of a coordinated system that can identify and help people understand, here's something I could do in this regard, here's something I could do in this regard. Mm-hmm. Just finding the understanding on our part and then helping the community understand what all is involved. Mm-hmm.
Are we coordinating in ways that we need to as a community? I mean, you three and your organizations are doing incredible work, but the reference to a system, that's a little different mm-hmm. than three organizations and others who are doing great work in the community. Mm-hmm. Are there opportunities that are missing in terms of coordination? This is a little bit different question than I had mm-hmm. suggested I might be asking, but I think it's an important, if we have a little time to go there, mm-hmm. on what do you see as opportunities we ought not to miss or we ought to seize in terms of creating more effective systems?
So I think there is a coordination, but I also think, just like what Mark said, right now everybody is coming out of this pandemic, and how are we going to keep our team strong? How do we keep everything moving forward? Some of that does go on the back burner. It's not that, I mean, we'll still talk, we can still have that relationship, but I think sometimes some of that coordination does get put aside a little bit. Mm-hmm. Just because we are all trying to keep everything afloat. And it doesn't mean that it's not there, and it doesn't mean that it can't get stronger, because I think it can, and I think we're always looking for ways that we can support one another. And, you know, for us, our insecurity, our food insecurity, is not just about money. We have people who have money that get meals from us. It's about the fact that they cannot prepare meals for themselves. So we have a lot of people who are homebound. They're unable to get their groceries. They're unable to even stand to be able to put food on the table. And if they're not eating, then their health is going to deteriorate. And if there's even studies that show that Alzheimer's can be a problem with health and hunger. And if you are not getting those nutrients that you need, things can continually get worse. But how do we do that then, that we all can get involved and help support those people? Can we be getting food from you? Is there something mm-hmm. that, you know, that Mark can do? But I think there is times that we could do better. Mm-hmm. But I think right now it really is working at what can we do with our agencies to get us back up to where we were before.
Yeah. Any other reflections here on systems and coordination?
Well, when you say systems, then I kind of go into another mode, because it is an all-encompassing problem, if you will, but I absolutely agree with Carla. Mm-hmm. Literally, I met Mark probably a month before COVID happened, and so we agreed, you know, we're going to be in touch. Well, we're in touch, and it's on the fly. Hi, we've mm-hmm. got extra potatoes. Can you use our extra potatoes? Okay, great. Goodbye. We need to continue that, and as Carla said, build that, but then reach out, because there are all kinds of discussions that I'm pretty sure I don't have a clue are happening in this community mm-hmm. Regarding housing, regarding even recreation activities, all kinds of things that are being discussed, that if somehow we could clone the clock and come up with more time, mm-hmm. Once we feel like our organizations are a little bit more back to some stability, which I loved your comment about flexibility. Mm-hmm. It's kind of getting back to some stance that we can be flexible, reflexive on, then to have conversations like you around this table mm-hmm. With other business efforts, community efforts, to at least start the conversation about, you know, what about those seniors? And mm-hmm. yes, some of those seniors do get food from us, and we've maintained, we always refer, but how's that going? Let's right. sit down and have a time that we talk about it. Let's enter the conversation about housing and other elements. Is there a system for that? No, I don't think there is.
I think I'd add two things. I think we would all agree, and I know some of my other colleagues would agree, we're still in crisis mode. Mm-hmm. We want to coordinate, we try our best to coordinate, but we're dealing with a crisis still. Yeah. So the crisis comes first. And then, if we can find some bandwidth in there, then we try to do the other stuff. So it's not a matter of not wanting right, to, right. or it's just, to your point, there's not enough hours in the day mm-hmm. to get around to that. So, you know, I think people understanding there's still an underlying crisis going on in our community. It may not be as in your faces as the pandemic was, but there's still a major crisis yes. happening that yes. we're all trying to deal with. And then just take a half a step back in regards to the food insecurity piece. A lot of what we're seeing at the Hour Centers is those that are visiting our community market or community cafes or hot meals program. It's not always just, you know, the food insecurity piece, but it's an actual strategy. Mm-hmm. Rent's gone up, utilities mm-hmm. gone up, the cost of gas has gone up, groceries have gone up, and pay is not keeping up with those increases. So what we're seeing a lot of people do is come to the Hour Center, get groceries, save $100 or $200 a week that they can go apply to rents, utilities, yes. not have to make the decision between, I got to put gas in my car to get to work, and the only way I can do that is to skip breakfast or lunch, or my family's yes. got to skip breakfast. So as you were saying earlier, it's deeper. It's sometimes people are coming to us not thinking, you know, I'm skipping a meal. It's like, I got to be able to afford gas to get yes. to work. And that's how they're doing it. They're coming to visit us, visit you all, and they're saving money there that they could divert to the other basic needs, shelter, utilities, et cetera, et cetera. So we're seeing a lot of that as well, as people are using it as a strategy just to stay stable so they could divert their household, you know, revenue to other expenses that they have.
Yeah, the this is what I'm listening to is kind of the classic example of urgency. trumping everything else, mm-hmm. right? There are a bunch of important things that you'd like to be addressing, but the need is so urgent mm-hmm. that you've got to continually be responding.
And Tim, I want to put a name on that and a face on that, because this is not meant to be an excuse, but all those folks that Mark has described are people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so while we are looking at our organizations and our volunteer base, our staff, needing to get some sort of sense of stability, it is for the people mm-hmm. who come and roll down their window and they're crying mm-hmm. because they've had to make those decisions about, if I do this, then I'll be able to, or this just happened to me. And people are apologizing and saying, I'm sorry I'm here. Mm-hmm. We're glad you're here. How can we help you? And it's, I just got an eviction notice, or I just ran out my lease and I don't know what to do next. We have food for you. Mm-hmm. Let's think about the next step, and have you tried this, have you tried that? Mm-hmm. But all that we talk about wanting to build understanding and build systems, but needing to come back to some, at least, like I say, platform that we can respond from, is because of those people. And the little girl in the back window who says, do you have bananas today?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have bananas. Can I have one, please?
Yeah. Well, I want to come back to at least a version of this part of the conversation in just a minute, because I'm going to ask you about both worst fears and your best hopes. And for me, in my own experience, most people wake up every morning with some combination of both in their heads and in their hearts, right? We live our lives, oftentimes driven by our worst fears, which sends us in particular directions. And every once in a while, we get a chance to pause and say, wait a minute, what are my aspirations? What are my best hopes? And we might strategize or respond differently to a best hope than trying to avoid a worst fear. So I want to address both of these. And in the best hopes, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about systems. But given what you shared about pre-pandemic, coming through the pandemic, the sense of urgency right now, the potential burnout with staff, and I'm certain that, like everybody these days who struggles to keep people on the job, right, especially if they have other options, what should we all know about your worst fears about food insecurity, and then all of the complexity that you've just laid out? It's not just, this was going to be a conversation about food insecurity. This is a conversation about a way more complex set of conditions, food being part of it. What are those worst fears? We should know what they are, and then we'll pivot to best hopes. Because our worst fears could occur, right? Mm-hmm. And we'd like not for that not to happen. So we need to focus on some other options as well. Are there worse fears that you want to share?
Oh, yeah.
We'll start, Carla.
That's all you.
Oh, yeah. I think we're up at night sometimes thinking about those worst fears mm-hmm. all the time. So for Longmont Meals on Wheels, we do not have a waiting list. We have never had one. We have never had to put somebody on a waiting list. But there are Meals on Wheels programs across the country that do. And they do not have enough funding. They do not have enough help to be able to put food on the table. And that is a fear of mine. I don't ever want that to happen. I don't ever want it to be where we cannot feed who needs to be fed. And I think that's scary for all of us, is when you have that person show up and maybe you don't have any food available, or you don't have the funding to be able to give them the meals that they get. And so for Meals on Wheels, we do charge on a sliding scale, but over a third of our people do not pay anything. And now that SNAP has gone back to pre-pandemic and people are not getting the money that they were getting.
SNAP is
Supplemental
Assistance
Program.
Yeah. There you go.
Caught me off guard there for a minute, yeah.
You put me on the spot on that one.
You know, when you're inside the house, those acronyms, you know, everybody
that's
knows
true.
What they mean. When you're
that
outside the
house,
like, well, as educators, we can relate to that.
We need to go back a step and... In describing this, I've seen it frequently in the press, and the reality is it's what we used to refer to as food stamps.
Yeah. Correct.
It hasn't been called that for a long time, but it's Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
Exactly.
A federal benefit.
Yeah, and now that has happened, We're now finding that there's even more individuals that are seniors that are going, I can't afford my medication. Yeah. How am I going to stay in my house? What am I going to do? And so for us, we do deliver Monday through Friday, but we also can do frozen meals if people need those meals. And we will not turn people away if they cannot afford meals. So it does not matter whether or not they have money. We just want to make sure we can get everybody fed. But one of my biggest worries is that there's going to come a time that we are going to have to really make some really hard decisions. Mm-hmm. And so, but for now, we haven't had to do that. So I think that is the positive for us, is that we do live in a community that really supports us. And we do not get federal funding, and there's some programs that do, and now they're struggling with their federal funding, and they're not getting their community to step up. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have to worry about that, because our community already has.
Yeah, I think the same thing. One of my biggest fears is where is the end to this next? To the point that we talked about earlier, at the IRIS Center, the needs have now eclipsed the highest point of the pandemic. And I'm not seeing any signs that trend is changing. Every day I talk to my team, like, where are we at? Who came in today? What's happening? And there's zero indications that this is going to slow down. In the meantime, we've been able to connect people through federal dollars through the county for ERAPs, or Emergency Rental Assistance Program, where we could help them get money for their rent to stay housed. Well, that's evaporated, and now people are falling off the cliff. In our community market, our food pantry, we spent $30,000 last year between October and December purchasing food to make sure we had enough in our pantry. We've never done that before. I just met with my food services director today before coming to the show, and he's about ready to order another $30,000 worth of food. We're looking at, between $100,000 and $150,000 that we need to fundraise just to keep up with the current need now if it doesn't increase anymore this year. So, part of my fear is the same thing is, we've been very fortunate because of the community and a lot of other great supporters and people who care. We were able to keep up with the need in the pandemic. I'm not feeling as optimistic. I'm not feeling pessimistic, but I don't feel as optimistic right now because the needs have just moonshot over the pandemic for us, and we're doing things we've never had to do before. And can we sustain that? Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know how many members of the community. And I think people on a casual level would acknowledge things are still a challenge post pandemic, but the depth of knowledge and understanding, I think, doesn't exist. This is really helpful.
Well, I wanted to go to Carla's answer and say, yes, ditto, actually, to Mark also. My middle of the night two worries are, first, volunteers. And I have some sitting in the audience. Thank you, volunteers. Will
yes,
they show
you.
Up? Because there's a very real thing called volunteer fatigue.
Yeah.
And it can be simply, I've done this job now for 3 years or 13 years or 20-some years for you all. There's just a volunteer fatigue that, am I making a difference? Mm. I feel like I'm, Sisyphus and the rock, only I'm rolling a shopping cart and it's getting emptier and emptier. So there's the volunteer piece, but then the other piece is exactly what Mark described. We've always prided ourselves that in 13 years, no one has ever walked away without food. Mm-hmm. And we're very much a pop-up operation, and the food comes in from Community Food Share, and we distribute, and there's a finite end. And we've always managed to have some more at the end of that period. But we are doing much more purchasing. While the bulk comes from FoodShare has their own realities in terms of donor monies, either corporate in-kind donations or funds. They also have the whole supply chain and shipping issues. And so we have been purchasing, as Mark described, but we're facing the same thing, placing an order for food that didn't come in today because it didn't show up on order. So are we going to be able to satisfy needs for the folks that come to our doors, or will we not have the food? But as Carla said, the hope then, or the reality that builds the hope, is volunteers do show up. Mm-hmm. And they continue to show up, and new volunteers show up, and also that donors show up, like I described before. They come in with their trunks open and their shopping bags, and provide us literally today just what we needed to keep going. But yeah, if anybody wants to chat in the middle of the night, you've got three people here who are probably up. Food and Security 101.
I'm going to use that as a segue to invite anybody in the audience, that people know in the audience, if anybody wants to participate in this by asking a question, they have a chance to do that. So if there's anybody out there who wants to ask a question, I can't see you where you're sitting now. If you came right over there, no pressure, but if I see somebody show up over there, we'll give them a chance to ask. And as volunteers, that's up to them, right?
Nobody's on the hook. Exactly.
So let's pivot now. You began to touch a little bit on, you used the word hope, because we also walk around with those best hopes, right? Mm-hmm. And if we are clear on them and build strategies to achieve them, the prospect of realizing them are enhanced. So let's be as clear on our best hopes, and then I'm going to follow up with a question about strategy. But what are your best hopes moving forward with all of the challenges that you're dealing with and you're sharing with us tonight?
The crisis ends tomorrow. I think I reflect back on the pandemic, because I was kind of in the same mode at the beginning. It was like, how are we going to do this? You know, are volunteers going to stick in there? Are we going to have the funding that we need to support the community? I mean, all these same questions were going through my head back in March of 2020, and we came through it. The community stepped up, the volunteers stepped up, my staff were amazing, and you know, in the end, I felt like it was very successful, if you can consider you know, a success in the pandemic. So, you know, for me, my hope is that, you know, we did it once before when I thought the odds were against us and stacked against us. We've done it. Why not do it again? And even though I feel, you know, some animosity and some anxiety going into this, at the same time, I know this is an amazing community. They've stepped up before. Our volunteers are incredible. Our staff just continue to do what's right and to give all of themselves back to the community. And I know if all that falls into place, it'll all be okay in the end. So I lean back on everyone else, because I know I can't do it. I just surround myself with great people, and they do a great job.
It's true. I think that's what we all do, is that you find these great teams, you get some great volunteers, and we really rely on them every single day, just like you guys do. But we have 31 different routes that go out. So we have people who are taking meals every day, and then we also have the people who help in the kitchen. And so we couldn't do it without them. And I know we say that all the time, but it's the truth. It's something that we really rely on as a nonprofit organization. And I think my hopes is that we can continue to do what we've been doing for all these years, and we can continue to let people know of the resources that are out there, because we have a lot of resources in this community. And I don't want people to think that they shouldn't go for them because they're afraid that they're taking from somebody else, because we hear that a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm taking from somebody else. Well, you should not be afraid of taking from somebody else. If you need those services, they're there for you, and we're there to help you get what you need. And I just hope that more people understand that.
Well, if there's no message that penetrates the community other than that one tonight, let's hope that one does. There's no reason to be reticent or bashful or shy about coming forward.
Well, I'm too old to remember this movie, but World Peace and a Pony, that's my hope. And in this regard, it would be that we imagine a world where people are respected, number one, and people are supported. And I think we've heard lots of stories about how this community does support, but that expands. Mm-hmm. And support looks like living in a home that you can afford, paying for your medications, and knowing that there are places you can go when some of that slides. Particularly when we were inside, we would have, we now do a drive line outside, which is why I refer to inside outside. But we would have folks who would come in and say, "Hi, it's me again. Hi, you." We're like, "Cheers, we don't forget your name." this happened with my job, and I need to pay for the big delivery of medication, so I'm here. And we welcomed him, and we didn't see him, okay? So that we would have that whole system that comes together and supports people across whatever need. But also that our community members our volunteers, and I'm going to pick on someone who literally is in the audience, who came to me one day and said, "Can I talk to you?" I'm like, "Sure, what do we need to talk about?" Said, "I want to thank you. I want to thank you for letting me volunteer here." I'm like, "Oh, I didn't know I signed off on it." You can still keep coming. And it was, and the answer was, "Thank you for letting me come and do what I know I'm supposed to do." Mm-hmm. And so people in the community understand that I believe what we're supposed to do is honor, respect, and support each other in whatever way that is, from donating to supporting our center, from supporting city council as they work on things, that we come together and together do what we're supposed to do.
So I want to come back. First of all, that's all inspirational, honestly, to listen to all three of you. I want to come back to connect the question about systems and best hopes and strategy. Is there anything you want the community to hear, city council to hear, churches to hear, service clubs to hear, about how they could lean in, how they could help with strategy or being part of a system that would help you implement a strategy to realize those best hopes? And I know this is a little bit of out of left field kind of a question, but I wouldn't want to miss the opportunity for people to hear whatever take you might have on how could other organizations like the city or service clubs help with elevating, you know, to strategy to realize those best hopes.
I think for one is nobody's too young to learn this. Nobody is too young to learn to volunteer or to give to an organization, no matter what it is. One of my favorite stories was we had a girl, her dad was a volunteer for us, and she came in one day after we had set out our mailing for funding, and she gave me a penny. So she gave me a penny and she was so excited that she made this donation. So I wrote a nice little handwritten note, you know, sent it back to her. And now as an adult, she donates to us all the time. Yeah. I don't know
That's
if my handwritten
story.
Note had anything to do with it, but she learned at a young age how important it was to give back to the community that she lived in, whether it was with volunteering, whether it was giving her time in some other way. She would make little centerpieces for the tables and do different things. And I think that's the thing that I would like people to know, is there's so much more to give to us than just even volunteering weekly or giving in funding. We all have little projects that you can do to really support us and to teach your children that this is a really good direction to go in their life, and that volunteering even gives back to you. You feel so good about it once you have done it. And I think just everybody in the community knowing that can be very supportive.
Yeah, I kind of along those same lines, you know, I do believe, you know, a lot of people do want to help, but they don't know how, and maybe they don't know what the crisis is out there. Mm-hmm. So having, you know, a forum like this to be able to get the word out. You know, inviting, I know any one of the three of us, if we were invited to go talk to a business, a social club, you know, a service club, we'd be there in a heartbeat. I know every time that I speak with, whether it's an individual or a group, by the end they're going, "Oh my gosh, I had no idea it was that bad. I knew something, but I didn't know it was that bad." And then that kind of starts to activate people. And then the next thing comes is like, well, then how do I help? And then that's when it kind of opens the door for us to say, you know, we have one-time ongoing volunteering opportunities. You could do a food drive. Here's where our shelves are bare. You know, financial assistance can go to rent assistance, et cetera. So I think, you know, just helping us get the word out. And if people are comfortable and want to speak up, great. If you're not, give one of us a call. We'd be happy to step in and do that, you know, in front of anyone. Just to help make the awareness out there of what the issues are, so then when they're ready to help, they know where they can plug in, or at least know who to ask and find out, how can I plug in with the Round Pantry or Meals on Wheels or the Hour Center?
Yeah.
And I just wrap it up and say, I know we all have websites that you can access, so if you're directly ready to volunteer or donate food or funds, you can do that. Inviting someone to come speak to you, but then either in a corporate, in a group, or individually, just studying and finding out more. There's lots of things online and in print media that you can just read and say, what is going on here? And then making connections, maybe not with us, but with others who have similar concerns, connecting with your elected officials. We have great congresspeople who come and visit us and who are working in their own stead on support for food assistance and other kinds of programs, rent assistance, that you can have an impact just by understanding and helping others understand and then supporting efforts, whether it's these efforts or other efforts to support the people in our community.
Yeah,
great. So I shared with you in our preparations for tonight that was most important to me is that I ask questions you want to answer. Anything I haven't asked? Any question you hoped I was going to ask that I haven't that you want to answer right now?
He's a really good question.
That's all right. I'm not trying. I don't want to put you on the spot. I just don't want to wrap this up without missing and miss an opportunity for you to say, no, you didn't ask me the question I really wanted to answer. Listen, what you three do and your staff do every day is such a blessing to the community. I'm grateful. I can tell you there are thousands of people in this community who are grateful and appreciate what you do every day. The fact that you would take an hour out of your busy schedules to spend it with me tonight to tell this story. But I hope what we do is amplify, right? We use this to amplify the message, and people get the opportunities to step up right now, needed more than ever, right? If we thought pandemic came and went and the need's gone, we need to all think again. So we have a studio audience. I'm certain that they would like to join me in thanking you for being here.
Let's do one more thank you for asking.
Well, it's fun for me to have a chance to be part of these stories and share them with the community. So God bless you for what you do.
Thank you.
Longmonters, that is the backstory on food insecurity, but a much bigger story in Longmont, what we've learned and where we're headed, and I think how you can help.